Becoming a full-time writer can be overwhelming. Join Jay Thorne and Zach Bohannon as they help you improve your craft and find your audience so you too can become a career author. This is the Career Author Podcast.
All right, welcome to a brand new episode of the Career Author Podcast. I'm Zach Bohannon, and with me, as always, is Jay Thorne. What's up, dude?
Not much, man. How you doing?
I'm doing good. I cannot complain. I guess I could complain. I feel a little bit like a hero today. You want to, because I have an injury that's affecting my work.
Oh no! What is that?
I have the worst hangnail on my pinky.
Oh my! Ever.
And I am pushing through and writing today.
Oh my God! Everyone listening just groaned.
I know. especially as a guy who is a huge hockey fan and knows that those guys play through broken legs and stuff in the playoffs. And I actually, just before we got on, I just read a story about a baseball player who got put on the disabled list because he hurt himself while changing pants.
Ooh.
And I'm like, oh, well, that's typical baseball for you.
So, yeah, that sounds like something I would do.
But I'm pushing through. I'm making words happen today. In all seriousness, I am like, every time I have to use my pinky, I'm like, have a shooting pain go through my hand. That's how bad this hand is. So, I've been trying to use a lot of dictation today. So I thought it'd be funny to joke about on here.
That people, yeah, that's pretty good. I thought you were going to kick off with the big celebration for our 25th, episode.
It just feels way more than 25. So it feels like, probably because we've done other podcasts in the past and stuff.
Yeah.
But it definitely feels a little bit different. I do want to give a shout out. Last week, I know you and I talked about, but last week I had the opportunity to actually be a guest host on my favorite video game podcast.
Oh yeah. Yeah. Tell us what that is. And what
I want to give a shout out to those guys. So if you like video games, then cool. If not, sorry, you can tune out for a second. I was a special guest, host on Nintendo Dads. So it's a really cool podcast that obviously centers around Nintendo and the Nintendo Switch. There's four hosts on the show and all of them are dads. And so it's a real family friendly show, which is really cool. They talk about games, but they also get into, a lot of they get into family related issues. A lot of it has to do with games. And it's really interesting. Like one of the hosts is a psychiatrist and one of them is a youth pastor. So they have a lot of experience like dealing with kids and different levels and stuff. And, so a lot of times they go beyond games, but anyways, I've been a fan of that show for a long time and was able to guest on there last week. I've been a patron for a while and stuff. So if you're into video games and you want to hear a really cool podcast and you want to hear me on there, it was a good week to be on because E3 had just wrapped up. So I got to go on there. There was a bunch of new stuff to talk about. But it's called Nintendo Dads and you can check that out on iTunes. And just wherever you would listen to this podcast, unless it's on our website, you can find it.
Did you have a problem thinking about your language when you were on that podcast?
No, I was actually really good about it.
Oh, okay. I wasn't sure if you had to like really concentrate on not swearing.
No, actually, it actually was. I didn't even really think about it, to be honest with you. Like I knew I couldn't cuss, and there's one guy on their show who does slip up every now and then, which I've given him some crap before because that's like one podcast I will listen to with my daughter around.
Yeah,
and because I know I can usually. But it's really good. So if you're into games, check out Nintendo Dads. If you're into Nintendo specifically, they talk about retro. They got a lot of cool stuff going. But I was on episode 184, so they've been going on for a while.
Nice.
So yeah. So check that out if you're into games or if you just want to hear me ramble on more than you already have to. Cool. You got anything cool you want to talk about real quick, or you want to just get into it?
I will just make a quick mention. I don't know if our listeners are listening to Pedal to the Metal, but that's the writing podcast I do with Rachel, and I'm realizing that's not the best name. I mean, I realized that a long time ago because people think it's about heavy metal, but it's a writing podcast, and the past few episodes we've been doing some story grid analysis on one of her ideas because she was having a problem plotting and she wanted some help. And the third installment of that went up this week. So if you're interested in hearing like a deep dive on a real project on how you can use story grid methodology, you might want to check out those episodes. I believe they are episodes 73, 74, and 76 on the Pedal to the Metal.
Yeah, and I strongly recommend everyone go over and listen to it because it's a different perspective. Because, mm-hmm. you know, you and I talk about the story grid on here a lot, but we're both doing it every day. And yeah. even though that you're much more knowledgeable in it than I am, I still have a pretty good grasp and understanding of it, and I'm getting better daily. But like Rachel is someone who was kind of, I don't want to say she's set in her ways because she's always wanting to learn, but like she had a process and realized it wasn't really working for her.
Yeah.
And it's been really interesting hearing you talk about story grid with her, someone who's like new to it and like helping her through one of her actual story ideas for a novel she's actually going to be writing.
Yeah.
So I definitely recommend everyone go over, and we can throw some links in the show notes to those.
And it's, you know, it's a great thing if you're, I mean, in any industry, really, there's something so great about teaching because, you know, yes, of course you're helping out other people when you teach, but you also learn so much. And working with her on this particular project is teaching me things about story grid and about storytelling. And that happens with every client, every person I coach too. So I would strongly recommend folks who have a skill set that is teachable or valuable or both to do that, because you're going to help yourself as well. You always learn a ton when you teach.
And big props to Rachel, because Rachel like realized that she had a problem, because, you know, if you haven't been listening, Rachel basically hit a snag in the book and like hit a wall and didn't really know what to do. And she, instead of just like trying to go back to her own ways, like she went out and tried to find a new solution for it.
Yeah. And so. I don't want to get too far off on this tangent, but the whole reason we did it was because she's very productive and successful. So her publishing method works, and she's mostly a pantser. It's what she said, but she found every time she got into a manuscript in revisions, she would get stuck because she hadn't thought ahead of time about it. So I'm not like casting judgment on pantsers or saying it should be one way or the other, but she specifically said like, yeah, I could keep doing it this way, but then I get stuck and I have to rewrite and I have to throw words out. And I need a tool that will help me not waste so much time in words. And that's how it all came about.
And the cool thing with what she's doing too, is like, we've talked about a lot about the person out there who wants to pants, but maybe wants a little bit of guidance. Mm-hmm. And she seems like she's going to be, you know, like the person who just gets her 15 obligatory scenes, or 25 in her case, since she uses the crutch act. I mean, the fourth act, since she writes four act structure. But then I think she's going to allow herself to like pants the other scenes.
Yeah, exactly.
So, which is totally, like, we've talked about that a lot, how like you can do both a little bit, mm-hmm. like you just, a little bit of planning goes a long way, and helping you stay a little bit more productive, in our opinion.
Right.
And from what we've, by doing this a lot, have kind of found out. So, cool. So go check those out. We'll put links to that in the show notes. So,
yeah.
Cool. All right. So just a reminder before we get started that the Career Author Podcast is brought to you by our patrons over at patreon.com/thecareerauthor. For as little as $1 a month, you can support the show and gain access to our 2 monthly bonus episodes, as well as so much more, which includes our breakdown of The Shawshank Redemption, which is the movie analysis we're putting out this month. So you can become a patron of the show by visiting patreon.com/thecareerauthor. And with that, looks like we've got a couple of new patrons this week. So we want to give a big shout out to Rebecca Bryan and to Tori Element.
Thank you. Thank you.
Yeah, absolutely. So thank you guys for supporting us. We definitely appreciate it. So And I guess just real quick before we get into our new segment, our Jay's Ways and Zach's Hacks.
Shout out to Chris for that great idea.
Yeah, thank you, Chris, for giving us that suggestion, since I kind of shit on Jay and Zach's Hacks. So, because Zach's Hacks just sounds so much better. So Jay's Ways and Zach's Hacks. But our main topic today, after we do our tip, our kind of our tip segment, is going to be the opportunity cost of adaptation. So we're going to be talking a little bit about like what it means if you want to start trying to kind of approach film adaptation or TV or even other forms of media like games and such. So,
right.
But before we do that, we'll do our new segment, Jay's Ways and Zach's Hacks.
Can we do one more quick announcement?
Oh yeah,
first?
Yeah, absolutely.
I want to mention that we also made a slight change to the domain name for the Career Author. So for various reasons, we had experimented with having our domain name just land on the Patreon page. And we're gonna try something a little different. It's really not going to impact any of you listening. It's probably more for people who are just finding the show. But basically now the careerauthor.com goes to a dedicated webpage. It's a Libsyn-hosted, super simple. Everything's on there. You can just click right on the page and listen. If you want to go to the Patreon page, it's now the patreon.com/thecareerauthor. So just a slight change up. If you notice that, if you typed in thecareerauthor.com, it'll now redirect to that the regular page as opposed to the Patreon page.
Yeah, and there's a banner up in the top right corner for Patreon too. If you're one of our patrons and trying to head on over there to get your content, so there's plenty of ways you can check that out.
Yeah,
so.
And most of our data that we see in our dashboard says that you all are listening to us mostly on iTunes or Stitcher anyways. So I don't, there's probably a very, very small percentage of people who are listening from the webpage, but if you are, there you go. Now it's easier.
It's definitely easier now and a little less jumbled. So, well, cool. All right. So today for Jay and Zach's ass, Jay and Zach, I think I said Jay and Zach's ass.
I think you did.
I could have just let that slide by and no one would have known, but.
Oh, they would have known.
What fun is that when I can call that? Jay's Ways and Zach's Hacks. Today I'm going to bring a little Zach hack to you, I guess. And I want to talk a little bit about promos and kind of a good tip and something to think about when you're lining up promotion. Now this can impact a lot of different things. This can impact your launch. This can impact like if you're, you know, sign up to promote, to blast your book out through some different email newsletters like Erie or News Today. And especially if you get a BookBub, I'm going to give a couple pieces of advice from some stuff that I've seen that works a little bit better especially if you get like a BookBub ad. So the big thing is that if you're, like what I want to talk about is that if you're running a promotion, obviously you want to try to do a promo. Like let's say you're discounting your book from $4.99 to 99 cents for a limited time, or you're launching your book at 99 cents. You're going to have ideally you should have several days of promo, like where you want to promote your book. And so, mistake.
Can you maybe just talk for a quick minute about what you're considering promo? Is that where you're going?
Yeah, I'm talking about like if you have a book,
like
either
paid ads,
a book on sale, mm-hmm. and you're gonna like run some like dedicated mailing list ads like through Eater News Today or BookBub, like one of those type, like if you're signing up for those type of blast.
Okay, so you're talking about mostly paid advertising when you say promo.
Well, kind of, sort of.
Okay.
This is basically just any type of big like timed promotion you're wanting to do on a book. So I'm not talking about like your book's out and you're just feeding Facebook ads or Amazon ads to like get it consistent traffic. I'm talking about you have a sale or you have a book coming out, like either you have a book discount or you have a book coming out and you are in like, that's what I mean by promo.
I got it. Okay. So it's almost like an event or there's a short window that you want to get some visibility or sales.
Yeah, absolutely. So let me break it down like this. So let's say that you're that you get a BookBub ad. Okay, let's say you sign up and you get a BookBub ad. This is just where I'll start because this will kind of clear up what you're asking me.
Yep.
So let's say you get a BookBub ad. And that's awesome. Great. You have a BookBub ad. What I would recommend doing is, you know, you definitely want to try to surround that ad with other promotions. Like, and that can be ideally, going with some of the other, mailing list, providers, like I said, eReader News Today, Fussy Librarian, like the places where you go, you pay like a little bit of money and then they feature you in their daily newsletter as a discount book. So, what you would want to do is spread that over multiple days. So like if you get a BookBub on like, let's say June 1st, don't line up all your promos for June 1st. Like don't go out and get an eReader News Today and get that on the 1st and go, you know, don't hit your mailing list on the 1st. If you're going to do that, don't do your post on Facebook, like spread it out over multiple days. Because, Amazon, like, and I'm specifically talking about Amazon here, rewards you for consistent sales more than one big dump of sales on one day. So
you're not like a few years ago, you wanted that big spike, but what you're saying now is that's not the case anymore.
Yes. That changed because of sites like BookBub, because people get this one big spike one day. And then what Amazon realized, well, these guys would realize as well, they got a BookBub ad. So you know, what they do now is you get a spike and then you just will drop back down if you only have like one thing going on.
Mm-hmm.
So what you want to do is the days leading up to that. And I personally think that whatever your biggest promotion is going to be, like, let's say it is the BookBub, you should have the BookBub at the end of your marketing plan for this. And the reason why is because you do smaller things every day. So maybe one day you'll hit social media and another day you'll hit your mailing list. Maybe another day you have an eReader News Today blast. Another day you have Fussy Librarian. And what'll happen is that promo every single day will give you a little bit of a push and you'll go up the rankings a little bit. And ideally right before that BookBub hits, you'll have your book, like Amazon will see, oh, okay, this book's doing pretty well. It's going up a little bit. It's not just one, like all of a sudden one day, boom. And then when that BookBub hits, like you have a little bit better chance of having a longer tail on that because you didn't just have everything happen in one day. And B, you've already made your rank higher than it was before you started, ideally. So you have a better chance of like going higher in the charts once you have less of a distance to go to the top from that BookBub. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does.
So spread any, like if you're doing if you're doing a sale, like if you're discounting your book from $4.99 to 99 cents, like spread your stuff over multiple days. Like if you're going to hit your mailing list and stuff, like I said, like don't do your mailing list and your social media on the same day. Like even if you don't have a big mailing list or you don't have a lot of social media following, still just put those on different days just to give yourself like more of, you know, so you have more spread out of what you've got going on. And this is the same thing that you and I do with launches. When we launch a book, you know, we usually, if we're doing 99 cent launches, which we're starting to think about moving away from, but that's another story. But right now we're still doing 99 cent launches. We launch the book and in our case, we try to do 2 weeks of activity and promotion around the book. Now, you might not be able to do 2 weeks because you might not have enough resources, but between the two of us, we've got a lot of different resources we can use. So like Jay and I make, you know, we schedule to hit our newsletters on separate days, our social media on separate days.
And different segments of our newsletters as well.
Different segments, yeah. Like we won't even hit our whole list. Like we'll hit different segments of our list. Like it's all very strategic. But the idea is to, especially during a launch, is to feed Amazon a little bit of data at a time and don't blow everything you have right from the beginning. So I bring this one up because this is a mistake I've seen a lot of authors make. You know, they'll just throw a bunch of promo over a couple of days and like that's it. Like, you should really try to spread it and try to have, especially if you get like a BookBub ad, you should definitely try to have your biggest promo near the end.
Right.
So,
right.
So that's kind of my tip. Do you have anything you, did that all make sense after I kind
yeah.
of everything?
Yeah, definitely. I think the only, as someone who has a BookBub coming up, which, and who's been doing this, and maybe this would be something we could circle back around to after yeah. it happens. One of the things I, unfortunately for me, was I couldn't line up the BookBub at the end because of the availability and sort of the late selection that I got. Like, one of the things when I applied for the BookBub is I didn't specify a particular date, hoping to increase my odds of getting it. And when you do that, they just assign you one.
Yeah.
And as soon as I got it, I went and checked the other sites, and I couldn't get any before. So mine have to come after, which I know is not ideal. But you know, some of the things that I did, in case people are looking for specifics, you mentioned a few of these. Like, I have over from the BookBub and then the following 7 days, I have a number of things scheduled. I have a Kobo Daily Double deal. I've got a Bargain Booksy. I've got an ENT ad, and I'm waiting to hear back on Fussy Librarian. So those are all, they're going to be following the bub, but they're all spread out over 5 to 7 days.
A lot of times what you can do too, though, is like, and if that's all you can do, then that's fine. Like, mm-hmm. what you don't want to do is just have BookBub.
Yeah,
like, you definitely want to take advantage and try to like throw some money at some other advertising avenues and really like get as much out of it as you can.
Right. Right.
But a lot of times you can email them directly and be like, "Hey, I've got this BookBub date. I'd like to try to line up some stuff before it." And sometimes they'll come back and say, "Hey, I actually have a slot available here,"
yeah.
or something. So that's what I did.
Yeah.
And was able to kind of have a bunch of stuff leading up to it. But even if you can't do that, you know, if you're going to hit your list or do some things like that, then maybe you can do those type of things before.
Right. Right.
And, yeah. If it's a timed sale, too, another thing I would recommend is try to leave a couple of days after your BookBub where it's still going to be on sale.
Right.
So that, because people may not get it the first day, but they might come in a day or two later. But you also, in my opinion, you don't want to wait too long to go back up in price if you are doing a discount, not a freebie.
Yeah.
Because... once you go back up in price, you're still going to get residual sales from where your rank is.
Yes. Yes.
And you'll get full price sales.
Right.
So yeah, and
mine is a 99 cent deal. It's not a free bub. So,
yeah. So in your instance, you know, you'd want to have, well, you have stuff coming after, but, as soon as your promo's in, you probably want to have only like a day or two after that before you bring the price back up. So you can take advantage of the visibility and people being like, "Oh, this book must be good. It's highly ranked. It's only $3 or $4 or whatever it is. I'm going to give it a shot."
Yeah. Yeah.
So, and then you end up making more royalties on the back end. So,
right.
So
it's a great hack.
Awesome. Cool. I'm glad that was good. So, well, cool. Well, with that then, we can go ahead and dive into our topic here. And this one was your idea. So I'm going to pass it over to you, especially since I've been talking, and let you kind of explain this one.
Yeah, this is something I'm really curious about. And, you know, the takeaway, I think, is going to be that catchphrase, it just depends. Like, I go back and forth on this and about the idea, about the time spent, and you alluded to it at the top of the show, but basically what we're talking about is, you know, the entertainment landscape is changing almost daily. And if you look even the way things have changed over the past 5 or 10 years, I mean, 10 years ago, you didn't have Netflix. I mean, you did, but not like in its current form. I mean, that's a tremendous difference in shifting in the landscape. I mean, 10 years ago, we were just getting the Kindle. So you think about how different things are. And part of that then, as creatives and as storytellers, you know, we are all guilty, for better or worse, of kind of peeking around, like, oh, what's happening on TV, and what about script writing and video games? And it's very alluring, this idea of sort of adapting your story into other mediums. And I think part of the allure, and this could be part of our conversation, is that there's definitely more of a sort of a, I don't want to call it a Hollywood mentality, but, you know, video games, television, and film are definitely sort of glitzier, I think, than the novels. It's just the numbers. You know, way more people watch TV and watch movies than read books. That's just a fact. And I think for us authors, it's really tempting to kind of look around and say, wow, I can tell a really good story in this novel. Wouldn't it be cool if I saw my name up on the credits in the movie theater? And I think part of this is anything you do in your career, whether you're an author or not, it comes at an opportunity cost. And very simply, that is, what are you not doing if you're doing something else? And I just don't know how I feel about it. I know there are a lot of folks around us who have kind of who came into the independent publishing space around the same time, who are sort of actively pursuing some of these other opportunities and even having some success with it. And I just don't know how I feel about it. And I don't know. I mean, there are things that you and I have talked about, things we've considered, but we really haven't sort of put any skin in the game yet on any of those. And I'm wondering what you think about the adaptation, and maybe a good place to start is, is there a certain medium that you think is more accessible to authors than another?
That's a good question. I don't know if necessarily any of them is more accessible. I mean, I think that's kind of it almost feels like that's a depends who you know type of thing. Yes. Like to one person, you know, they might have connections to someone who is in TV or someone who's in film, like, but another, so for them, that would be more accessible. But, you know, another person might have, you know, they might have friends in the video game industry. So I think that's kind of a depends question. That's kind of like, that really just depends on who you know, if you know anybody. There might
be people. I guess my assumption would be, let's say you don't know anybody. You're just a novelist and you know other writers, but you have this desire to tell your story in different ways.
So let me stop you right there and ask this, because even that question, there's two different types of people, authors there. There's the author who, like, let's say you want to do a movie, okay? Now, you've got to make the decision. Do you want to try to write the movie and sell the script, or do you want to sell the rights to your IP, which is way less hands-on?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
You know, and so I think that's the first question to ask, because there's a lot more opportunity cost in if you're going to try to write something and sell it. Because I think a lot of authors feel like, oh, you know, like I can put together a novel, you know, I could totally write a screenplay, but it's a completely different type of writing.
Oh, yeah.
Just like copywriting is.
Yes.
You know, so like, it's a skill that you're going to have to learn. It's going to take time. You're going to have to practice. And that goes back to your question of, what are you not doing because you're trying to learn how to write screenplays?
Yes.
And yes. I think that's a big question of like where you are in your career. Mm-hmm. And I think that does go back to who you know, because if you write a screenplay and like, what's the next step? Like, do you have someone ready you can pitch it to? I mean, there's a lot that goes into that question, because you don't want to learn all this stuff about writing screenplays, but then have nowhere to go with it.
Yeah.
When you could have been writing novels, which that we know that's a much more accessible, we can write a novel and we can put it out. And mm-hmm. there's a low monetary cost to that. Now, you could write your own movie and put it out, but there's a lot more monetary cost to that. And you still have to have someone to film it. You have to, like, I mean, there's a lot more steps in that process.
Right.
So I think that's the first thing to look at. And because, like, in our instance, like, and I think you and I have kind of talked about this, Like if we were gonna get into TV or movies, like at least me, I don't want to speak for you, but like I feel like there is a part of me that would actually like to take some time learning to write screenplays and get into that. I think that'd be neat. But I personally would rather just sell the rights of an IP to somebody and let a professional screenwriter write it.
Yeah. Yeah.
So like, to me, that's kind of a way that you can get into the game, but not have to put as much of a time suck into it.
Mm-hmm.
Like, does that make sense?
Oh yeah. Yeah. And you know, this is, I don't hear it. I don't hear this conversation. I don't hear this in this conversation very often, if at all. And I'm wondering how you feel about it. So for me, I mean, I've experimented with the video medium on YouTube and podcasts and video podcasts and things like that. And I have read a few books on screenplays, and I've read a few screenplays. I haven't tried writing anything yet. And I wrote several pitches to video game companies over the years. But here's what's really important. I have to remind myself. I love the novel writing process.
Mm-hmm.
I love that. I love sitting down and thinking about the story and scaling it up from some simple beats, and whether you and I are writing it together or whether I'm drafting it myself and in the revision, and then the publishing process and getting the cover and writing the sales copy and publishing it on Amazon, like that. I love that process. And I'm not like, it's not that I think it's wrong if you want to learn how to do screenplays, but I'm like, I love doing, like, where does it stop? Like, where do you say, like, this is what I've always wanted, and then do that? And I feel like some of the people in our space are like constantly chasing the golden ring. Like, there's always something better. And you know, I think I had an email conversation with Colin Barnes one time, and I think we were talking about, like, you know, agents and self-publishing, and he basically said, he's like, man, this is as good as it's ever going to be. Like, this is awesome. You know, like, yeah. Some people lose perspective that, and I'm not saying, like, I'm ambitious. I'm not saying there's wrong with ambition, anything wrong with that, or that you should stop learning. But I kind of feel like if you, at least for now, like, if you really love what you're doing, like, just keep doing that. Like, you know, because the opportunity cost is to learn that other skill or to write something else, you're not going to be doing what you originally said you really love to do.
Absolutely. Now, all that said, because I totally agree with you, like, I love novel writing, and it's what I'm good at, you know, or I'm at least half decent at. I'm a little bit better when I got you revising me. I'll say that. You know, like, but I do want to, personally, I would like to leverage my career into other mediums, like, and how, and this goes back to the how question, like, how would I do that? Like, would it be selling it, or would it be like actually working on something else? And, you know, you and I, you know, I mean, I think we've kind of hinted at this in the podcast, like, this is no secret. Like, I really want to get into video games.
Right.
And I mean, and you and I have even had meetings with developers. So yes. Nothing's coming out of it, like, just to be honest, but like, we have had those conversations because it's something we're into. And I even have two different perspectives on that. Like, for instance, there's one IP that we have that I totally see as a game. Mm-hmm. And I can visualize in my mind what the levels and stuff would look like, but like, that's something that I would want to basically pass on to somebody to make.
Yeah.
But on the flip side of that, you know, I think it would be really cool to collaborate with like a small, indie video game studio, because the video games are going through a very similar thing to what authors are going through right now, to where it's like, there's like gold mines out there right now for indie video game developers. Mm-hmm. So I would love to work with like a small video game team and actually like come up with a new story for a video game. The thing is like, am I in a position where I can do that yet? Right. You know what I'm saying? Like, could we afford the time to be able to go do that project? And I don't know if I could say yes to that right now, you know, because we're so...
That's assuming competence in writing in that medium as well.
Absolutely.
Like there's a big difference between coming up with a story concept and writing a video game.
Absolutely. And I'm not sure if it's something I could do or not, you know? So it's, I don't know, man, it's an interesting conversation.
I mean, the closest parallel we have right now that might help people sort of crystallize this thought is audiobooks. You know, you could, as an author, I'm talking mostly fiction here. You could sit down and you could get all the gear. You could learn the audio stuff. You could do the mic placement. You could record. You could edit. And then you could publish your own audiobook version of a novel that you've written. But that's a tremendous opportunity cost, both in time and in money and to be able to, assuming you even had the voice, but like, let's assume you do. Like, that whole process is an investment, and you're not going to be working on other stuff while you're doing it. So the flip side to that is, you know, you either do, you know, a royalty share or a stipend, or you sell the IP like we've done for audiobook rights, and you basically just hand it over and you let the pros do it, and you don't worry about us doing all the recording and learning all of that.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that, you know, this is the same conversation we have when we talk about book covers. Mm-hmm. Like, you don't, unless you're an artist, like, you shouldn't be making your own book covers. Like, that's a really a waste of your time. I would even say
if you're not a book cover designer, you probably shouldn't be making your own covers. Because you're an artist doesn't mean you can design book covers.
Absolutely. I mean, you definitely should be passing that on to someone who is a book cover designer. You know, so that's kind of the same conversation. Like, yeah, you could record your own audiobook, but like, how much time are you going to lose when you could be writing your next book? And B, how much is the quality going to suffer? Like, unless you're a narrator and you've already got the setup, you already have the know-how, you already have a process, like, that's a different story.
Right.
You know? And I also understand that, like, if you're, there is a little bit, talking about audiobooks specifically, there is a little bit of a difference there between nonfiction and fiction, because a lot of nonfiction listeners like to listen to the author narrate the book. That's a weird thing that, like, a lot of, you know, but even then, like, we know a lot of, like, Joanna used to narrate her own audiobooks. She did it like one time and then was like, nope, not doing that again.
Yeah. and even if you went a middle ground, like, you could go to a studio and you could hire an engineer.
That's what Joanna did. Yeah.
I mean, that's not any less time. It's more of an investment in money, but like, that's a way that you don't have to learn all of the technical ins and outs and still do that for nonfiction.
Yeah. I don't think that, like, authors who have done that and talked about it just being such a pain in the butt, I don't think that they realize how hard audio editing is and how time consuming that is.
Or recording it. I mean, this is even where our musical background comes in. I mean, you and I have spent countless hours in studios, and we know how tedious and repetitive that process can be. It's not easy. And when your only instrument is your voice and there's nothing else, that's even harder yet.
Absolutely. Yeah, you're absolutely right. So I think that, it's an interesting conversation, because it goes back to, you know, what do you want to spend your time doing? And, you know, do you want, there's ways to get into those other mediums without, spending a bunch of time, like, trying to do it all yourself. Cause, like, I think with, like, a big fear with movies and TV from authors is like, oh, if I just sell this to somebody else, like, they're going to ruin it.
Yeah.
You know? And you do have to go in that, like, understanding that a director or a writer or producer, whatever, is going to have their interpretation of your book.
Yeah. And to add on to that, I don't know what the statistics are, but I would say the overwhelming majority of books that have been adapted to movies, the screenplay has not been written by the author.
Absolutely. Yeah.
So you have to consider that too. Like you know, you may have someone who's interested in your book and then you sell them the rights. Well, you don't get to write the screenplay most times.
Yeah. And that's something you got to think of. And like I was just saying, that might mean that like your book might not end up exactly as it is in the book on the screen,
mm-hmm.
you know? And I think that that's kind of a hard thing for some people to swallow and they don't want that to happen, but it's just one of those things where like, if you really want it to happen, then you might have to take your emotion off your sleeve a little bit and learn how to collaborate a little better with
yeah.
people on that stuff or yeah. just kind of let it go, I guess. So,
yeah. I think, you know, I think a good way to kind of think about this is, you know, are you enjoying what you're doing? And if you are totally thrilled with what you're doing, then just put it on the back burner. You know, there will be time. Hopefully you'll have a lot of years ahead of you. It's like for me personally, like right now in this moment, I just want to write novels. Now in 6 months from now or a year from now, that can change and everyone has the right to change their mind. But like right now I'm loving writing novels and that's just kind of good enough for me, I guess.
Absolutely. So with that, I guess we'll announce that Career Author, the movie is being made and it's going to star Johnny Depp as Jay Thorne and Zach Galifianakis as me. So we're really excited.
I would watch that.
I don't know if I would, but that'd be a weird pairing in a movie.
Yes,
but,
it would,
you know, but, anyway, so yeah, so man, that's a good conversation today. That was interesting. So
yeah, it's, you know, sometimes we just have these topics that don't have a clear, you know, resolution, don't have a clear perspective. That sometimes they're good just to be thinking about them, and not that we or anyone else has all the answers, but sometimes the conversation can help move people along.
Yeah, and this is a good conversation for us because this is something we've talked about. Like, we've actively explored video games and we you know, you even got hit up about the one medium we hadn't even ever thought about. I guess I can say it. Remember the guy that hit you up at the convention?
I don't even remember it.
So, about the board game.
Oh yeah. That's right. Yeah.
Yeah. So like even that, like, you know, Jay had somebody approach him about one of our properties about turning it into a board game.
Yeah.
Like not like Monopoly, but like a role-playing game. So like that was even a medium we hadn't thought about, but that would be a thing where like, we just turned it over to them and they did what they wanted.
Yeah. I wouldn't want to learn how to make video board games, like
board games, me either. So, or I guess tabletop games is a better way to say it. I think that's what those are technically called, but
okay.
Anyways, but yeah, so this is a good conversation for us to have just cause it's stuff we've talked about, you know, especially with games and stuff. And, you know, I'd be interested to hear like comments from anybody, like, you know, if there's someone out in our audience who maybe even if you have more experience in this, maybe you have something optioned and you've, you know, kind of taken that next step, or maybe you know some, I don't know, like if you have any kind of experience with this stuff, like drop it in the comments and let us know. Cause it's an interesting conversation.
Yeah, definitely. And it's probably something we'll end up we'll come back to it periodically, I'm sure, because, you know, hopefully as our brand and our platform grows and more opportunities arise, that we'll be having more of these types of conversations. But for right now, this is kind of where we are. So,
yeah, eventually Hollywood will stop just doing a bunch of remakes and they'll start coming after indies.
Maybe. I don't know.
Hollywood might not be the right answer, but I could definitely see like a Netflix.
Yeah. I was going to say Netflix or Hulu or Prime or something. I don't know about the big guns,
but some of the other more progressive companies might start, you know, looking beyond, to find some new stories to tell. So
yeah, I swear to God, I hope I don't offend anyone. I don't care if I do. I do not need to see another fucking Spider-Man movie. Please just stop with Spider-Man.
I could say something that would be even more offensive. Yeah, I'll just go ahead and say it. I don't need to see a movie redone with the opposite sex either. like see that happen a whole bunch, you know. One seems to happen a lot. I'm not being sexist by any means. I'm just saying, like, don't, like, just let things be, you know. So hopefully that's not offensive, because I didn't mean for it to come off that way. So you can tell me when I go off the air, just to keep my mouth shut next time. So.
It's all good, man.
But anyways, so all right. Well, I guess with that, then we'll just go ahead and jump on out of here.
Yeah, sounds good.
All right. Later.